Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. I'm going to give you a rundown now, and by the way, those of you who are taping, please get ready to do so, because, in fact, you might want to begin right now. I'm going to run down what I covered last week that I'm not going to be covering this week. There's going to be considerable overlap, or at least a sizable overlap, between last week's programming and this week's. That's to permit people to resume the thread of the discussion. Now, the core of the program that we've been going into, the core of this connection between the CIA and the SNL, has been an excellent series of articles which have been put together and are being put together by Pete Brewton of the Houston Post. Brewton is spelled B-R-E-W-T-O-N, and this investigative series, beginning in February and apparently ongoing, the last article that I have received from our Savings and Loan Ranger is dated March 18th, exactly a week ago. This series is, well, it has exposed some fascinating connections between organized crime, the intelligence community, specifically CIA, and these elements appear to intersect, or they do intersect, with the same milieu that was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal and so many other national security operations over the years. There are substantive indications that, at least to a certain extent, some of the SNL failures may have been due to funny money being used by CIA and their related organized crime associates to basically traffic cocaine in order to finance the Contra war in Nicaragua. Now, last week we began by taking a look at an article from the Houston Post of February 4th of 1990. The most important single aspect of that particular article was a list of the 22 SNL failures that, according to the Houston Post's information, were connected to the CIA and organized crime. At the bottom of the list there is the Silverado Savings and Loan. Now, as I said, next week we're going to go into the Silverado Savings and Loan failure, the Houston Post's article from March 11th about that failure. I just got that particular article and have not had time to prepare it for the archives, I guess you could say. It's a very long article, and as is the case with so many of these operations, it's a very, very tangled web. We should bear in mind all the time when dealing with the intelligence community, particularly in some of these financial scams, that covert operations are not generally public events, although they can be detected, and sometimes they blow up in the faces of the operators. The fact of the matter is, engraved invitations, publicity releases, are not sent out for covert operations. People working undercover for the intelligence community do not wear Delaney tags. They don't wear a sign saying, "Hello, my name is Bill. I'm working undercover for the CIA." Doesn't work like that, folks. So, as a general rule, a certain amount of intelligence extrapolation from the facts to the probable causes underlying those facts is always a factor that comes in handy with regard to investigating the intelligence community. So, again, a cautionary note, the article forthcoming next week about the Silverado Savings and Loan and Neil Bush is, I guess we begin looking at this as the Colorado merry-go-round, because it's as dizzying in certain respects, and very similar to, and perhaps even ultimately connected with, some of the financial machinations and the scams that we looked at in Radio Free America number 18 and our other programs dealing with the Vatican banking scandals, the collapse of the Banco Ambrosiano, Messrs. Roberto Calvi and Michele Sindona et al. In any event, the February 4th, 1990 Houston Post article that we looked at by Pete Brewton was headlined, "Evidence Finds CIA Operatives May Be Implicated in Failure of 22 SNLs." That headline gets something of an award for understatement, I think. And the first article was noteworthy primarily for introducing the subject, talking about where some of the information came from. It's worth noting that trial testimony given by former CIA agent, or self-proclaimed and apparent former CIA agent Richard Brennecke, information that he gave at a deposition on behalf of a pilot named Adolph Rupp in connection with the so-called October Surprise, the deal between the Reagan-Bush campaign and the Khomeini government to withhold the hostages taken from the U.S. Embassy in Tehran until after Jimmy Carter's election defeat was assured. Richard Brennecke testifying in connection with that touched on the CIA connection to some of the SNL failures. Those are the main points in the February 4th, 1990 article. Now, after that, we took a look at a pivotal article, again Houston Post, again Pete Brewton, called "The Bank's Shadowy Demise." That was from the Houston Post of February 8th of 1990. Now, this dealt with the collapse of the Indian Springs State Bank of Kansas City, Kansas. Now, here again, we find one of these tangled organized crime intelligence milieus, which appears to intersect in a very big way with the Iran-Contra scandal and quite possibly with some of the people implicated in the Christic Institute's ongoing lawsuit. Now, the main names in connection with the February 8, 1990 article are the, as I said, the Indian Springs State Bank, a bank which failed, a fellow named Farhad Azima, an intimate of the intelligence community and an intimate of the Reagan administration and the Republican right. Now, he in turn is affiliated with two people named Anthony Russo, an organized crime-related figure, and a fellow named Mario Renda. Mario Renda himself, one of the main figures not only implicated in the failure of the Indian Springs State Bank, not itself an SNL, it's a bank. Mario Renda is implicated in the failure of the Mainland Savings Bank in Houston, one of the major SNL failures linked to the CIA by the Houston Post article. Mario Renda, in turn, is involved with Indian Springs State Bank, Azima, Russo, and also Adnan Khashoggi, the Saudi Arabian weapons dealer, one of the pivotal figures himself in the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, in addition to those names, we have Azima, Russo, and Renda. Renda hooked up with Chicago, with Khashoggi, rather, also with the Mainland Savings Bank failure in Houston, or the Mainland SNL failure in Houston. They are affiliated with Indian Springs State Bank, and they are also, in turn, connected with a number of different national security-related organizations. We want to remember the names of three airlines in connection with this article, and also the name of EATSCO, the Egyptian-American Transportation and Services Company, an organization put together by many of the operatives in the Triple Wilson operation, including Messrs. Shackley and Kleins, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, two of Ed Wilson's superiors in the CIA and two of his collaborators in some of his many operations, including his Libyan operations that we've talked about so much, particularly Radio Free America shows 4 and 30, and also the EATSCO operation to traffic arms to Egypt pursuant to some agreements undertaken during the course of the Camp David negotiations in the late 1970s. EATSCO apparently had an air arm, at least according to this article and information developed elsewhere. That air arm is called Global International Airways. Now, the failure of the Indian Springs State Bank was due in no small measure to the fact that Global borrowed money from Indian Springs, and that outstanding money never paid back helped bring Indian Springs State Bank down. Farhad Azima, the aforementioned trio of Azima, Russo, and Renda, intimately involved both with Indian Springs State Bank and Global, and apparently involved to a certain extent with helping Global bring down Indian Springs State Bank. Global, in turn, has rented office space to Race International, a Race Airways. Race Airways, basically, was one of the CIA air conduits, one of the air conduits used to fly the TOW missiles to Iran, some of the weapons that were trafficked to Iran underneath the under the agreements, I should say, reached between the Reagan administration and its national security establishment and the Iranian government. And in addition to Race, again, Race brings some of the TOW missiles to Iran. Race rents office space from Global, also Southern Air Transport, the airline for which Eugene Hassenfuss was flying when he was shot down. Southern Air Transport and Global share maintenance operations at some of the Florida airports that they both use. So again, three names of people here, Azima, Russo, and Renda, both, and Renda hooked up with Khashoggi, both involved with the Indian Springs State Bank, both involved with Global International Airways. That is identified as the air wing of EATSCO, one of the major operations involved with the Triple Wilson tangle, I guess you could say. Triple Wilson, Frank Triple himself, but Edwin Wilson, Thomas Kleins and Theodore Shackley figuring prominently, as well as some of the other people involved with EATSCO in the Christic Institute suit. So we have Global, we have Race, we have Southern Air Transport and EATSCO, in addition to the Indian Springs State Bank, Azima, Russo, Renda, and Khashoggi. Khashoggi, but simply peripheral to Renda in this case. Again, if this seems complicated, it is complicated, and I strongly encourage listeners to get a hold of the archive show from Archives on Audio when it is entered in there, and that'll help clear up some of the exact details concerning these relationships. Again, it's very complicated. It's not meant to be really, really clear. So apologies if it doesn't seem as apparent as it might. That's why I read the information into the archives last week. It will be available from Archives on Audio. Now, the next important article that we looked at from, again, the Houston Post and, again, Pete Bruton, comes from February 18th of 1990. That article is headlined, Loan from Texas Thrift Weaves a Tale of Deceit. Now, this concerns the failure of the People's Savings and Loan in Llano, Texas, capital L-L-A-N-O, Texas. Now, People's Savings and Loan went down as a result of a bad loan, specifically for $2.3 million, and that was made to a fellow named Harold White. Harold White is a director of the Sunshine State Bank. The Sunshine State Bank also borrowed money, and apparently to turn that money into funny money for the drug trade, that also borrowed money from People's Savings and Loan, and the key figure here is a fellow named Ray Corona. Ray Corona and his father, Rafael Corona, were the two people who basically ran Sunshine State Bank, eventually closed down by federal regulators. Now, Sunshine State Bank, as identified in this article, was basically started up by the Coronas, in part as a result of utilizing drug money that was generated by a fellow named Antonio Tony Fernandez. He was heavily involved in Colombian cocaine and marijuana trafficking. According to Tony Fernandez's testimony, he rolled over and testified against Rafael and Ray Corona. The bank, Sunshine State Bank, was started up with drug money that he gave them. And again, Sunshine State heavily involved with People's Savings and Loan. Harold White, a son of Ronald Reagan political supporter Armour White, spelled A-R-M-E-R, a $2.3 million loan to Harold White, a director of Sunshine State Bank, brings down People's Savings and Loan to a large extent. Also, Ray Corona borrowed, although later was able to pay back $3 million from People's Savings and Loan. Now, in turn, Tony Fernandez had an unindicted co-conspirator in his marijuana and drug trafficking operations, some of which helped to found, according to him and according to the subsequent investigation, the Sunshine State Bank. That fellow was a fellow named Frank Castro. Frank Castro was a veteran CIA anti-Castro Cuban, and he basically, and again, no pun intended, we're talking Frank and Fidel here, but Frank Castro had worked for the CIA and the Bay of Pigs operation, and subsequently also a key figure in the Carew operations of the mid-1970s. We went into those in a big way in Radio Free America shows 26 and 27, in particular 27. We also came back to those in Radio Free America number 30. That information concerning Frank Castro and Carew is really pivotal for understanding some of the milieu involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Don't forget, too, that George Bush was director of the CIA at the time that this so-called secret team, as the Christic Institute refers to them as, that when they were doing their thing, so to speak, in the mid-70s, it was under the stewardship to a considerable extent of George Bush. George Bush, as vice president, was very strongly implicated in the various aspects of the Iran-Contra scandal. Again, Radio Free America shows 29, 30, and 31 go into that in considerable measure. We also come back to it in number 34. Now, on the February 18th, 1990 article, the interesting thing about Frank Castro, and again, Castro is a partner with Tony Fernandez. Tony Fernandez drug money helps to start the Sunshine State Bank. Also, another fellow, an anti-Castro CIA Cuban named Cartaya, is another friend of Corona's and involved with this milieu. Now, the interesting question here, and again, with all of these savings and loan articles, there as yet is no smoking gun linking this to the Iran-Contra scandal or drug smuggling. But boy, as I said last week, there are cartridge cases, spent cartridge cases all over the floor, and the air is thick with the smell of cordite. Somewhere there's a gun, and it sure as hell is smoking. We just don't have it in hand yet. And there are indications that a lot of these cases have been shunted aside, that the investigations into them have been compromised for national security reasons. But the key person here for our purposes is Frank Castro, associate of Tony Fernandez, and through Fernandez, the aforementioned Ray Corona of Sunshine State, because Frank Castro was associated with two anti-Castro Cubans, two fellows named Moises Nunez, and an anti-Castro Cuban named Francisco Frank or Paco Chanez. Now, all three admit to being heavily involved with the Contra support effort for training, basically, the Contras, and they also were involved, according to their own and other people's testimony, in doing so with John Hull and Felipe Vidal, two of the key defendants in the Christic Institute's lawsuit. We went into that in some information from a manuscript that was put out by Peter Dale Scott, and the exact title of that, and we're going to be going back into that this evening, is The Contra Drug Connection, How North Used Powers from Bush to Prevent Its Disclosure. And the relationship there of Frank Castro, Moises Nunez, Paco Chanes in an organization called Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, which ostensibly was a frozen seafood company, according to testimony developed both by the Christic Institute's investigation and the Kerry Subcommittee's investigation. That organization was specifically involved, that is to say, Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas was involved with drug trafficking on the part of the Contra support effort. The two key figures in Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas are Paco Chanes and Moises Nunez, two of the defendants in the Christic Institute lawsuit. Both of those individuals heavily involved by their own and other people's testimony with Frank Castro in training the Contras. And also, apparently, the same group was involved with Felipe Vidal and John Hull. Information developed both by the Christic Institute and by testimony and documentation developed by the badly compromised Kerry Subcommittee. Basically, the details concerning Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, Frank Castro, Moises Nunez, Paco Chanes, and some of the people involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, that is detailed in that particular manuscript by Peter Dale Scott. We went into that relationship last week. We're going to repeat part of that manuscript this evening. That was the next item that we went into, again detailing the Frank Castro, Moises Nunez, Paco Chanes connection, their involvement apparently in the Iran-Contra scandal, apparent drug trafficking in order to support the Contra war, and again the mutual documentation or the intersecting documentation being developed both by Christic Institute and Kerry Subcommittee concerning the Castro-Nunez Chanes Association. And remember, Chanes and Nunez involved with Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas. That is the key connection in that particular Peter Dale Scott manuscript. And again, I'm just going into this very quickly so that people get some idea of what we've been talking about, those of you who did not hear last week's broadcast. After that, we went into, for the second time, a very important article from a publication called Westword. That's Denver's News and Arts Weekly. This was an article by Brian Abbas about the Sunflow case. Ostensibly, that was a company developed to market a hydrator, which was going to help get produce from a field to market in the third world before it had a chance to decay. This, theoretically, was going to alleviate world hunger. Now, its founder was a fellow named Marcello Cabas, C-A-B-U-S, or Cabas. Apparently, it was primarily used to front or to launder drug trafficking profits, and there are numerous indications, not confirmed beyond a point, but numerous indications that some of that drug trafficking, at least, may very well have been involved with, you guessed it, the Contra support effort, Iran-Contra scandal, et al. Now, the key names there are Marcello Cabas, or Cabas. He's the head of Sunflow. The name Neil Bush crops up in connection with this in a big way, although Neil Bush himself protests his innocence, and although we have no smoking gun, there are abundant indications that this particular case was badly covered up, that the investigation was badly compromised, because many of the people supposedly investigating it were hooked up with the people who appeared to be involved. A very common, tragically common situation that we've looked into, that we have seen over the years. Now, the main names here are George Bush, Neil Bush, a black Republican named Arthur Fletcher, who helped get Sunflow going when he accompanied Neil Bush on a diplomatic mission to Africa in 1982. Arthur Fletcher helped generate publicity for Sunflow. Two of the other names that have been involved, well, again, Neil Bush, also Adolf Coors III, a member of the brewing family, although not apparently directly involved in the brewing operations. He apparently has a taste for right-wing Christianity, and his corporation, He Lives Incorporated, had invested in Sunflow. And again, the interesting thing about it is that the Sunflow operation appears to have not only been a front for drug trafficking, but quite possibly on behalf, at least to a certain extent, of the Contras. And there are indications that, again, the whole John Hull Christic Institute suit operation hooks up with this. The aforementioned Arthur Fletcher, the black Republican who accompanied George Bush to Africa in 1982 to help drum up money for Sunflow, was named in an article that we read from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, February 24th of 1990. He was named to head up the Federal Civil Rights Commission. Also, interestingly enough, he opposed Mayor Marion Barry of Washington, D.C. for the mayoralty nomination on the Republican ticket. Interestingly, and again, I commented that it was interesting in light of all of the publicity that Marion Barry's crack sting got, that the unanswered questions, the very portentous and very disturbing questions concerning Arthur Fletcher and Sunflow in general and the connections to George and Neil Bush, or possible connections, I should say, to George and Neil Bush, apparently have escaped virtually everybody's notice, at least except for the aforementioned Brian Abbas of Westword. And that article, by the way, was entitled Dealer's Choice, a Colorado invention was supposed to stop world hunger, but instead it left investors high and dry. And high and dry here could be looked on perhaps as a pun in light of the apparent drug trafficking that was going on. So Arthur Fletcher hooked up a Sunflow, although he protests his innocence, as do all the people involved in all of these cases. There are some very disturbing questions to be answered. I myself am not totally satisfied about the existing explanations for the activities of the people implicated in the Sunflow case. We then took a look at another Houston Post article, this from February 21st of 1990, which predictably perhaps mentioned that the CIA, or covers the fact that the CIA has declined to testify before a House panel that has been called upon to investigate this particular CIA-SNL scandal connection. The CIA protests that it does not violate American laws. If you believe that, then I want to sell you some stock in Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, in which, for which I am an agent, a sales agent. And if you believe that, you will probably believe that the CIA does not violate America's laws. Although the CIA is by no means America's worst intelligence agency, that honor is held by others. In any event, that's what we went into last week. We're going to take a short musical break now, and we are going to go into what we're going to be hearing this week, and then we're going to hear it. Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. Having dealt with the past, we're now going to deal with the present and future. Specifically, I'm now going to run down what we're going to be listening to this evening, although that's also going to intersect. It's going to overlap with what we heard last week. Now, we're going to begin by taking a look at an article from the Los Angeles Times about a fellow named Gilberto Sanchez. We looked at this last week. He is a key former U.S. intelligence agent, apparently working for, among others, CIA, DIA, and NSA at various times, not to mention DEA. And he is being named, or he has been named, by the L.A. Times as one of the key informants, one of the key people who will be giving testimony in the upcoming trial of General Noriega. Now, the interesting thing about Gilberto Sanchez, aside from all of the things he has done and the places he has been and the people he intersects with, is the fact that apparently he has been involved in a major, major case in Denver. It talks about a case in Denver, and that a lot of the information about him came to light in connection with this case in Denver. What I wonder, and again I'm asking a question, I'm not making a statement, is whether or not the case in Denver might ultimately hook up with the Sunflow case, which happened in Boulder, although it involved some people from Denver, and possibly also the Silverado Savings and Loan case. Again, in light of the Neil Bush connections, in light of some of the CIA connections to these various failures, it's a question I think that needs to be asked and answered. It's not a question that I have the answer to, but I wonder whether perhaps there might be a connection between the Sunflow case, the Silverado Savings and Loan case, and the unnamed Denver case that is referred to in this particular article. Gilberto Sanchez is referred to as the most important informant since Adler Barry Seal, the fellow who was very much involved in the Iran-Contra scandal and specifically drug trafficking on behalf of the Contras, and it was his plane that he had specifically outfitted for those operations that Eugene Hassenfuss was flying on behalf of CIA and Southern Air Transport when he ran into the business end of a SAM-7, thus precipitating the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, we're going to take a look after, review after the LA Times article, an article from Penthouse magazine that we excerpted. It's called Snowbound. It's by John Cummings and Ernest Volkman, and it's about Adler Barry Seal. This by way of bringing General Noriega into the whole picture of John Hull, Moises Núñez, Paco Chanez, Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, etc., etc. And General Noriega, of course, intersects with this group in a big, big way. We're going to take a look at Adler Barry Seal, General Noriega, Operation Eagle, later named Operation Black Eagle, Michael or Misha Harari, the former Mossad agent who has played such a key role with some of the cast of characters from the Iran-Contra scandal in many of these related operations, And we're also going to take a look in particular at the death of Hugo Spadafora, a Panamanian who informed two U.S. intelligence about Noriega's drug smuggling activities, not realizing apparently that the U.S. was working with Noriega to a considerable extent in many of those same activities, which were being conducted to a large extent on behalf of the Contra War in Nicaragua. That article, Snowbound, by way of looking at the Adler Barry Seal, the late Adler Barry Seal, whom Gilberto Sanchez is being compared to, and also by way of taking a look at the death of Hugo Spadafora. Now, the interesting thing is, and the reason we're bringing Noriega back, one of the reasons we're bringing Noriega back into this and taking a look at the death of Spadafora, who was killed by Noriega, apparently on information from the CIA that came through Costa Rica, is that information developed during the course of the Christic Institute's investigation, and in particular, documents obtained by the Kerry Subcommittee indicate that quite possibly three unnamed operatives of Frigoríficos de Puntarenas, the Moises Núñez Paco Chanez alleged seafood operation, which apparently was a drug smuggling operation and a Contra-related drug smuggling operation at that, well, three of those people apparently were implicated in the channeling of the information to Noriega that concerned what Spadafora was trying to betray about Noriega. Again, Spadafora informing to U.S. intelligence about Noriega's drug activities, unaware that U.S. intelligence was working with Noriega in those very same activities. Then Hugo Spadafora wound up being tortured to death by Noriega on information from the U.S. through Costa Rica, indications that Costa Rican intelligence got that from three unnamed operatives of Frigoríficos, I'll get it yet, to Puntarenas. Okay, so that basically is the significance of that particular firm. And if it seems like we're ranging a little too far afield, well, we're going to be coming back to some of these same interests and same names and taking a look at how some of this intersects as we get into the program. Again, after taking a look at the Snowbound article by John Cummings and Ernest Volkman, we're going to take a look again at the Peter Dale Scott essay, and by way of reviewing the role of Frigoríficos de Puntarenas in the betrayal of Hugo Spadafora. And after taking a look at that, we're going to review again another piece of information that we looked at last week. This concerns a brutally ironic statement by former U.S. Attorney Joseph Russoniello, who, upon the occasion of his impending retirement, has had some choice remarks to make, some very ripe comments about how the large Latino community in the Bay Area basically makes this an ideal place for drug trafficking because they insulate the drug traffickers from law enforcement. Well, that is ironic because there are very firm indications that Joseph Russoniello himself has done exactly the same thing that he accuses the Latin community of doing, namely insulating not only drug traffickers, but Latin drug traffickers, not only Latin drug traffickers, but apparently Contra-related drug traffickers from law enforcement himself. We will then take a look, by way of review, at an article from the San Francisco Examiner that, again, we read last week, talking about Joe Russoniello and his apparent insulation business that he has been running as well. It is very ironic that he is making these charges about the Latino community because, again, he himself has apparently been very much involved in insulating Latin American drug dealers himself. We're then going to go back and review Drug Tug Case Part 4, because some of the people involved with Joseph Russoniello's office apparently are involved with some of the very complicated and shady machinations surrounding the bankruptcy of the Lenvest Company, that bankruptcy involved to a considerable extent with the Drug Tug Case. We're going to take a look at Drug Tug Case Part 4 in order to take a look at former Joseph Russoniello associate Peter Robinson, who is representing Charles Duck and some other Lenvest people, and some very, very interesting connections that have been developing vis-a-vis Russoniello's office and the Drug Tug case, which, again, intersects not only with Noriega, but also with John Hull and many of the same people implicated in the Christic Institute suit, as well as the Kerry Subcommittee's badly compromised investigation. After that, we're going to take a look at a couple of fascinating... Well, actually, we're going to take first a look at first a fascinating piece of information from, once again, the Napa Sentinel. This from the Napa Sentinel of Friday, March 16th of 1990. A quick blurb in the Up the Wall section by Harry Martin talking about how Congressman Doug Bosco, from the same congressional district in which Napa is located, apparently Doug Bosco was very much involved in helping to, well, trying to turn away the investigation into the savings and loan scandal. He was one of the congressmen most involved in helping to block the investigation into the savings and loan scandal. Now, interestingly enough, there is a little blurb here that where Harry Martin makes an unspecified allusion to Bosco's CIA connections. I don't know what those references refer to, but we will then go back to an article from the first of the Drug Tug Archive shows, a four-part series entered into the archives so far. That particular article talks about how Doug Bosco, that very same Doug Bosco, was one of the signatories, one of the 17 congressional signatories, to a letter that was sent to Costa Rican President Arias, encouraging him to, well, encouraging him not to pursue the investigation into John Hull too closely. Whether or not there is any connection between the apparent role of Doug Bosco, Congressman Bosco, in trying to turn away the investigation into the SNL scandal, which we now know goes back not only to a certain extent, at least, to the CIA, but quite possibly to the same set of machinations we've looked at in connection with the Christic Institute, Kerry Subcommittee, etc., whether or not there's a connection between that and his attempt to turn away President Arias from his investigation of John Hull, and whether in turn those connect up with the Lenvest case, the Drug Tug case, which involves some of the same people and which took place in his district, and what this particular reference here by Harry Martin to Bosco's CIA connections, that's all he says. Well, we will see, perhaps. Apparently, there's going to be information forthcoming in the Napa Sentinel in weeks to come. We're then going to take a look at another article from that very same Up the Wall section in the Napa Sentinel, which refers to information tending to corroborate some of the claims by Drug Tug Captain Calvin Robinson that his criminal activities were in fact being conducted on behalf of CIA with full knowledge of CIA. That again from the Napa Sentinel of March 16th. We're then going to take a look at a couple of articles, one dealing with a frightening decision being handed down in connection with the trial of General Noriega that bans published information from being admitted into evidence if it touches on classified subjects. And we're also going to take a look at the bombing of a DEA office in Florida. Whether or not that's connected to any of this is anybody's guess, but it certainly is something to think about. We're also going to review very briefly the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle from Monday, December 25th of 1989, Christmas Day. Noriega surrenders to the Vatican Embassy the same day as a couple of the key people in the Lenvest case. In fact, some of the people who are represented by Peter Robinson, the Russo-Yellow associate, well, they were hauled in the same day, and I suspect, from what I know about who was leaking this information to Harry Martin, well, that's probably connected. In any event, that's what we're going to be looking at this evening, and again, as I've stated before, we are going to have yet another installment of the Drug Tug Lenvest case next week, because finally the Houston Post and Pete Bruton have gotten around to the Silverado savings and loan case, a very complicated but very, very juicy-looking article talking about Neil Bush, Silverado savings and loan, people connected to Charles Keating, people connected to Drexel, Lambert, Burnham, etc., and some of the operations that we have been talking about for so many years and that have figured so prominently in the operations that we're looking at in connection specifically CIA, Drug Tug, Lenvest, etc., etc. Again, another short musical break, and then back with the main body of tonight's addition to the CIA SNL Archive show. Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. We're now going to begin the next installment of our CIA SNL Scandal Archive show, that and related subjects. Now, again, because of a number of different connections that go back to Colorado, the Sunflow case, the Silverado savings and loan case, and in this article, an unnamed, although possibly, note the use of the term possibly related drug smuggling case, we're going to take a look at the state of Colorado, basically, ask the question is, are these cases connected? There appear to be at least some common elements in some of these cases, or at least the possibility of that. I think this is a very important question to ask here. Now, again, bear in mind the information that I outlined at the beginning of the broadcast, because we're going to read now from the Los Angeles Times of Thursday, March 15th of 1990. This is an LA Times story, headlined, Drug Runner's Testimony Key to Noriega Case at Stateline, Washington. And it reads in part as follows. Prosecutors in the Miami drug trafficking case against Manuel A. Noriega are counting on important testimony from a secret witness who has spent more than a decade alternating between drug smuggling and undercover work for U.S. law enforcement and intelligence agencies. Alfredo Sanchez, who risked his life developing a major case against Colombian cocaine dealers, appears able to bolster the government's central contention that Noriega had extensive dealings with the drug lords of the Medellin cartel. So far, Sanchez is a mystery figure in the Noriega case. His name does not appear in court documents in the case, and defense attorneys said they had never heard his name in connection with the case. Prosecutors in Miami refused to acknowledge his involvement in the case, presumably out of concern for his safety. Weighing the value of Sanchez's testimony is difficult because of the secrecy, and most records naming him have been placed under court seal. But records contained in a related case file in Denver portray Sanchez as a highly paid government informant who met with drug barons in Colombia on a dangerous undercover mission. A source who has had extensive conversations with Sanchez said the informant also met personally with Noriega while working for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Court records provide no hint of a direct meeting with Noriega, and efforts to confirm that assertion were unsuccessful. Records available in Denver and interviews, however, do provide the outline of Sanchez's key role in the Noriega case, as well as a vivid portrait of his life as an informant for the DEA, the military's Defense Intelligence Agency, and even the super-secret National Security Agency. Noriega is charged in federal indictments in Miami and Tampa with protecting drug traffickers and facilitating money laundering. The Miami case is scheduled to go to trial first in November. Much more is at stake than Noriega's own fate. That sentence has to get something of an award for understatement. Excuse me for interrupting. Proceeding again, and this, of course, really, I'm not trying to be cute here. This is really the reason why I think this article is so significant. To the question again, what is this Denver case? Does it in some way connect up with the Silverado savings and loan case, which apparently, according to the Houston Post, hooks up with CIA as well as Neil Bush? And in turn, are there any connections? Colorado's a big place, but coincidences in the national security establishment often lead to conspiratorial milieu. Is there a connection with the Sunflow case? Because some of the same names crop up in connection with all of these. Recall, of course, that the Medellin cartel and General Noriega figure very prominently in the drug tug case as well as the Christic Institute suit, the Kerry subcommittee's investigation. And that's why we're going into some of these elements here. It may appear that we're ranging far afield, but in fact, the same elements are involved here, and there are at least some indications that all of these may connect up. Again, that's the reason I'm reading this article. What is the Denver case? Returning again to the LA Times of March 15th, the Ides of March, appropriately enough. Much more is at stake than Noriega's own fate. A conviction would help the Bush administration justify its December invasion of Panama, which succeeded in its goal of forcing Noriega out of Panama to face trial in the United States. A source familiar with the case against Noriega in Miami described Sanchez as a, quote, very valuable witness, unquote, with access to sensitive information about Noriega's relationship with Colombian drug lords. That assessment was supported at Sanchez's sentencing on drug charges in June of 1988 by Richard D. Gregory, G-R-E-G-O-R-I-E, the former assistant U.S. attorney who put together the Noriega indictment in Miami. Sanchez had pleaded guilty to importing 80 kilograms of cocaine from Colombia to Miami, and Gregory appeared at the sentencing to describe Sanchez's cooperation in a bid for leniency. This particular defendant, Your Honor, is providing information and other evidence which will allow us to explain a great deal of the conspiracy which was sort of a blank spot in the Noriega case, unquote, Gregory said. Again, quoting, there are a number of facts which were essentially not clear because there was no testimony. This particular defendant can now provide the information which will fill in those blanks, unquote. Gregory offered no details of Sanchez's evidence, but he indicated that it involved in Noriega and Colombian drug barons Pablo Escobar and Jorge Ochoa, two of Noriega's co-defendants in the Miami case, also two defendants in the Christic Institute case as well. The indictment charges that Noriega, the indictment charges that Noriega provided a haven for Escobar and Ochoa after they arranged the murder of Colombia's justice minister in 1984, and that he protected their drug shipments through Panama. He said Sanchez would be called as a witness in the event of a Noriega trial, which seemed a remote possibility in 1988. He expressed concern over Sanchez's safety as a result of his cooperation with the government. The danger stemmed not only from Sanchez's role in the Noriega investigation, Sanchez had also worked for the DEA in putting together a case in which Escobar and five others were indicted for smuggling $80 million to $90 million worth of cocaine into Colorado for distribution in Los Angeles, according to testimony at the sentencing. One detail that should be recalled here, there is a considerable intersection, although we didn't go into it in great detail, between some of the figures in the Sunflow case and people in Los Angeles. Continuing here. He put his neck out a mile long, said Matthew Mayer, a DEA agent in Denver, describing Sanchez's daring role in the Colorado investigation. These people don't quibble when it comes to retribution, unquote. To protect Sanchez's identity at the sentencing, U.S. District Judge Stanley Marcus took the unusual step of ensuring that no one was in the courtroom who was not involved officially in the case. The transcript of the proceeding was sealed in Miami, but a copy was obtained from the public file in the Denver smuggling case. The Denver file contains extensive information about Sanchez's work as an informant. Interesting here again, what is this Denver case? Could it hook up with Silverado Savings and Loan and or the Sunflow case? There appear to be, as we looked at last week, a number of mutual elements in all of those cases. They take place in the same basic part of the country. Obviously, we can't draw a conclusion from that, but it certainly does raise some questions, and I think the answers to those questions are likely to provide answers to a lot of others and perhaps raise still more questions and troubling ones at that. Now, Alfredo Sanchez, the fellow who was the informer, not only in the Noriega case, and bear in mind that Noriega and the Medellin cartel figure in the drug tug case, as well as the Kerry and Christic investigations, he's compared with Adler Berry Seal. And again, I don't know what the Denver case is, whether it hooks up with the Silverado Savings and Loan scandal, Neil Bush et al., whether it hooks up with Sunflow, Neil Bush et al., but it's worth, I think, going into the case of Adler Berry Seal, who was gunned down here, and we're going to take a look at not only Adler Berry Seal's role in CIA-sponsored and Contra-related drug smuggling, but we're also going to take a look at General Noriega, how the two of them worked together, how they worked with the Medellin cartel and members of the so-called Enterprise, Oliver North and Company. But in turn here, we're going to take a look at what happened, one of the reasons why the mortality rate has been so high for people like Adler Berry Seal, and why Alfredo Sanchez and the people around him certainly do have good reason to be concerned for his safety. Very frequently, the people who take it upon themselves to inform on the drug smuggling activities of people like the Medellin cartel and General Noriega, well, often they're informing the people who are involved with those very same activities. That fate befell the late Hugo Spadafora, who informed to the DEA and elements of U.S. intelligence about Noriega's drug smuggling activities, not realizing at the time, apparently, that that very same U.S. intelligence was involved with Noriega's activities. They apparently, through Costa Rican intelligence, communicated Spadafora's information, his betrayal, to Noriega, who promptly tortured Spadafora to death. Now, this is interesting here and quite possibly significant because, again, going back to the Peter Dale Scott essay, three unnamed people working for Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, the Paco Chanez Moises Nunez firm, and who knows whether they hook up in the drug smuggling trade with Frank Castro, as they certainly have in the Contra support effort, but three of those people, apparently three people from Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, implicated in the communication, the betrayal of Hugo Spadafora. And again, that name brings us back not only to possibly to CIA S&L scandal, and certainly to the Christic and Kerry investigations, and as we shall see, many of these same elements are also beginning to crop up in connection with the drug tug case. Whether that turns out to be part of the same operation or a closely related operation, as there are indications it may be, well, food for thought and grounds for further research.